This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, can where you live influence how long you live? And a new study gives states a failing grade for making college affordable. Joining us today in our New York bureau, Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, plus E.R. Shipp, professor of journalism at Hofstra University School of Communication. And from Spotland Productions in Nashville, Tennessee, Jeff Obafemi-Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So before we move on to new topics, let's spend a couple minutes talking about the legacy of Tupac Shakur. It really strikes me that in much the way that some people see Martin Luther King Jr. as a martyr, some younger people, and not just in America, you see his posters up all over Africa, see Tupac as a generational martyr. And in fact, that's what we heard in our A section piece on Vern Chamberlain of the Tupac Shakur Center. Jeff, let me ask you this. Do you think that this is a fair comparison to kind of look at Tupac in some ways as the liberator of the hip-hop generation? Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I think it's a yes and no question. He's not a martyr in the same light. Was he a martyr for human rights, civil rights, and the like? It's a yes and no question. If you look at Martin and Malcolm, although relatively young when they died, they were old enough to have outlived their individual youthful foolishness and come into their own as true leaders. Tupac was still in the phase of finding his voice, not just as an artist, but as a personality of leadership. I remember speaking at Dr. John Henry Clark's funeral several years ago, and I recounted an experience I had with him when he was asked, as a big critic of Western religion, where he thought he was going to go when he died. And Dr. Clark told about how a young Malcolm X came to him in Harlem and was frustrated because he couldn't get masses of people to listen to him. When Martin and Malcolm were alive, they weren't immensely popular with the masses, but because of their legacy, they're more alive now than they ever were. Dr. Clark then turned around and said to the young lady that he hoped he left a legacy behind in his work. So in answer to the question, he said, well, young lady, you asked where I'm going to go when I die. I don't think I'll go anywhere. I think I'll just stay around. So love him or hate him, or alternately both, Tupac is more alive now than he ever was when he was walking on the earth. So
but
in that
Tupac
regard, he has obtained some level of immortality, at least either as a pop culture icon or at the most an example of unrealized potential.
But Tupac is not really, based upon what we just heard, Tupac is not being remembered for what he actually was. He was kind of a fake. He talked about his street cred and all of that, but he had a pretty solid growing up background. He was not a thug that he tried to portray himself as and that he wanted his fans to believe that he was. You had someone saying he meant what he said and it was real, and his mom said he's remembered for his honesty. I think that's kind of a crock. 10 years later, he's being repurposed. His image is being repurposed to serve other needs that people may have. Even the land they've built this monument to him on is repurposed. Stone Mountain is where the Ku Klux Klan reorganized itself after the Civil War.
Wasn't that a good thing?
Well, it's repurposing. It's like, okay, you're moving on to something else, but let's be real. Keep it real about who Tupac was and what he stood for. He hadn't done anything. So it's an insult to even use his name in the same breath as Martin and Malcolm. They had done something. Tupac had not.
Well, it's
arguably
interesting,
they
ER.
Live
let me,
long enough to.
It's my turn.
Well, let me just make a quick comment on, you know, the real fake thing. First of all, you know, rappers have been constant masters of self-reinvention. And just on a personal level, I grew up in Baltimore, and my best friend from high school's sister once lived in a house with Tupac during high school. He was bootstrapping it. He was an independent minor going to the school for the arts. He didn't stay there, but he's not someone who did have a silver spoon, I have to say. That's just not, he may not
I'm
have
not
been a hardcore thug,
spoon.
But
I'm
he didn't have
not
a
thug.
Okay. I don't have my thug credentials, but Michael, yeah. What do you think about all this?
Well, talk about keeping it real. I just am amazed. Who are these people, these young people in particular, who idolize, you know, depending on which side of this you take, either real or fake thuggery? It's no wonder that these young people are not getting into Harvard. It's shameful. Look, I met Martin Luther King Jr. I was a child, but I met him. I idolized him and the people who walked with him, the civil rights movement. I regard Martin Luther King Jr. as a friend of mine. Tupac Shakur is no Martin Luther King Jr. on any terms. I don't care who's making the argument. Now, much as I know about Tupac, besides his music, I saw in Tupac the movie. I think it was called Resurrection or something. You know, he was in and out of prison. He was, I would not call him a lyrical genius, but I would call him a lyrical artist. There was a certain flair about him that I liked. And the man is dead. And what I am concerned about is that 10 years out, that his case, the case of his murder, is a cold case. And so, you know, if we're going to do justice for Tupac, at least find his murderer. But I just don't agree with this cultural identification with either real or fake thuggery. I just don't grow
with
it.
Can I add something?
Yeah,
can
yeah.
I add something
go
on
ahead,
that, Farad? Because a value question has been raised here. And Mike, you raised the question, who are these young people who value Tupac these,
who claim to speak for young people, yes.
Who claim to speak for young people. Yeah. You know, they are young people who have no leaders. They are young people who don't have people who are addressing their concerns. Now, whether or not he was primarily a studio gangster or not, there was something, you know, a tree by the fruit it bears, there was something that resonated and continues to resonate with young people all over the world about something that he was saying. So we sometimes get caught up in the contradictions. And, you know, I'm a person, I love some Tupac, and I hate some Tupac sometimes, too. So I'm part of that contradictory kind of love-hate relationship with Tupac. But by and large, people are drawn to the fact that he would speak out, contradiction or not.
People
he
are
would
drawn,
speak out to the pain
Jeff,
there.
Jeff, and people are drawn.
We don't have leaders doing
people
that.
People, that's a lot of nonsense.
No, but,
we don't. We're missing
Michael.
Masculinity, and we find that when people like Malcolm X spoke out. One of the things that people relate about Malcolm is that Malcolm was very strong.
Let's not go into Malcolm X anymore. We'll do that.
Okay, let's call him Detroit Red. When we compare Detroit
we'll
Red
do that
to
on
Tupac,
Malcolm's anniversary,
we can't talk over each other, guys. So Jeff, you finish up your point, and then Michael.
Yeah, I'll finish quick. Let's not compare Tupac to Malcolm X. Let's compare Tupac to Detroit Red. Now, if we compare him to Detroit Red, then we're saying that he was in the same stage that perhaps
the
Malcolm
hustler
was in
that
in
Malcolm X
days.
Became.
Right. Mm. Right. He was a hustler selling women, pimping on the street, doing arguably more real ugly things than Tupac ever talked about. He just died before he had an opportunity to realize the grown Tupac. It was being realized in death.
This is just more sugary stuff. Look, I just don't buy the argument that there are, quote unquote, no leaders. There are leaders. There's all kinds of leaders, institutional leaders, corporate leaders. There are all kinds of leaders, civil rights leaders, religious leaders. You know, there are a lot of young people of all colors who say they don't have leaders. I mean, the whole fascination for Britney Spears and Justin, whatever his last name, Timberlake is, and all those other people. These people are just celebrities. They just sing music.
But
before we wrap this up, Michael,
I want to go to you and then ER with the same question. There have been cultural figures who've taken over the youth leadership role from preachers and politicians and business people. And don't you think in some ways that is part of the legacy of Tupac, that there was somehow with hip-hop this generational shift where people stopped relying on what we consider traditional leaders and started looking to rappers and other people? Michael, and then ER, and then we're going to move on.
It's a mistake. If that's true, it's a mistake to look to rappers as leaders. If that's true, I think seems to me that even they, the non-traditional leaders, have failed miserably and utterly failed to get young people mobilized in terms of civic discourse, in terms of civic participation, in terms of voting, in terms of making things happen in American society, in terms of going to school and staying in school and overcoming social distress. We are now identified with social distress. This is just an inversion of the rhetoric.
Well, now that Michael has closed his mouth for a minute, I can say Tupac was
nice
a cultural figure who happened upon the scene at the right time for maximum exposure. I don't even buy that he was in a Detroit Red phase. He did not indicate any desire or any skill at going beyond his fake thuggery music. What I will say, though, is that we should not hang the rap world's involvement in civic life on Tupac. I just write him off. But you can see that there are others who are trying to use their appeal to the masses of hip-hop fans, in any case, or using that well. Russell Simmons comes to mind.
Let's not talk
he
about
has
Russell
the Hip Hop Summit. They talk about getting out the vote, rocking the vote, all of that. Whether it's effective, I don't know. But I would hold him up, or the likes of Russell Simmons up, as someone to be admired more than Tupac. Tupac was just, you know, fly by night and doesn't really mean much in the future.
ER, you're trying to get us some letters here. I can tell that.
Go for it.
And I would not go with Russell Simmons as a leader either. The guy who identifies the fool is Farrakhan.
Okay, guys, we got to move on to another topic. ER, I'm actually going to start with you. And I think that in some ways this plays into the Tupac conversation. There was a new study that showed that Asian American women in Bergen County, New Jersey, typically reach their 91st birthdays, and that some of the lowest average age of death were among Native American men, also African American men. And, you know, there's this whole, get rich or die trying mentality that, you know, 50 Cent epitomizes, but a lot of folks getting shot in the rap game. What should we do about the health disparities, the socioeconomic disparities that seem to lead to these differences in mortality? Because, you know, more years on the planet means more time to raise your families, more time to, you know, get your Social Security money, all of those things. I mean, it really strikes me that a study like this exemplifies some of the great differences we have here in the U.S.
Well, more time on the planet also means more opportunities to become ill, because I don't think we were meant to be on the planet as long as we are. Having said that, I want to give a shout out to my grandmama. Big Mama Moore is 103, and she's in Conyers, Georgia, a pole black community. So, yes, where you live can affect how long you live. We know that. But it's how you live that affects how long you live.
Tell Big Mama to send me a guide, because I want to get where she is.
Tell me a super potato pie.
But the thing is, we have to take care of ourselves in various ways. We have to take care of ourselves personally, our health and all of that. We have to educate ourselves. We have to be part of community. I have seen people growing old who were very vibrant in their middle years, and then they became isolated from a real community. And as they became more isolated from that community, they lost it. So there's a lot of things. It's not just about white and black and old and young and Bergen County versus Conyers, Georgia. I think there's a lot more to this issue.
Well, you know, depression is actually one of the leading diseases affecting older Americans. And the black community traditionally has been very close, and people were not put in homes as they aged, but now things are changing all around. Do you think, Jeff, that there has been kind of a sea change in the way that African Americans live that might actually be hurting us now?
I think so. Let's look at the lifestyles. And something that ER said brought this to mind. My former grandmother-in-law, y'all can figure that one out, Martha McShepherd, lived to be at least 101, but reports say that she was 103. They couldn't necessarily find the year. But she lived in DeKalb, Mississippi. And she was a school teacher, saved all her money, left her grandchildren with a substantial sum of money she never even spent. I would go and visit her, and it would take her quite a while to get up at about 100 back then, get that wood stove going, feed those chickens, hoe the weeds from around the greens in a garden next to the house that she and her husband built over half a century ago. But do you get that activity? I'm looking at that woman, and I ask how she is, and she says, well, I done got to where I can't do what I like, but the Lord is blessing. She did more in terms of activity before noon than most people I know, including pencil pushers like myself who have to make time to go to the gym. She left the money because she never had to spend it on food. She grew everything. Steroid-free, growth hormone-free, pesticide-free. This isn't a big mystery to elders like Grandma McShepherd, like Big Mama, who recognize the value of a simple lifestyle with activity in it. We are, many of us, part of a generation that instead of taking the time out for a lifestyle change and going back to simplicity, we rather keep living crazy and dope ourselves up for the consequences.
Well, Michael, what about the policy implications of studies like this? Should there be a greater emphasis from the government, state, federal, local, or from nonprofits on really dealing with health disparities? And who's going to push this?
Well, good question, Farai. But, you know, going back to that study, you know, in my next life, I'm going to be an Asian American woman living in Bergen County, New Jersey.
No, you're going to be a worm.
my goodness.
And, I mean, the study suggests that where you live, combined with race and income, plays a huge role in your longevity. Oh, so what else is new? This is nothing new. In fact, I think one of the reasons why I'm an integrationist is I think you have to get out of these undesirable areas, these ghettos.
So you don't want to live. You don't want to live in the ghetto. You don't want to live with your folks.
I don't know. I do not want to live in Newark. If I'm going to have a choice between Bergen County, New Jersey, which is affluent, I will go to Bergen County, New Jersey, and not poor Newark, New Jersey.
But no, how many black people have the option of moving out?
Well, you asked the question about policy. That's my answer to your policy question. I think the government and the private sector combined must work so that people get out of racial and economic ghettos, and that we and the areas in which poor people are confined and consigned, they are unhealthy because of crime, because of stress, because of economic, environmental, racism. And we have to address those policy issues and get people into more affluent, middle-class areas, as well as improve lifestyle issues.
All right. Well, we have to end right there, because I got to give out the numbers for people to call us, because I know people have some comments about the Tupac situation, et cetera, et cetera. 202-408-3330, 202-408-3330, or you can send us an email. Just log on to npr.org and click on Contact Us and tell us exactly who on the roundtable made you happy or sad.
Michael Myers!
Thanks again to Freestyle Radio show host Jeff Carr in Nashville, and in our New York studio, Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, and E.R. Shipp, Professor in Journalism at Hofstra. Spicy as usual. We like it that way. Thank you.